More people did a little more shopping in February.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's The Morning Open. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Happy Friday. The Commerce Department says spending and retail sales numbers rose 0.3%. We're going to have some analysis on that coming up. And what's stopping progress on the former World Trade Center site? All that is coming up. But first, where's Wall Street? Markets are up right now. The S&P up about 0.2%. The NASDAQ about 0.1%. The Dow higher by 25 points, 10,637. European shares are higher right now as well, anywhere from 0.5% to 1%. And Asian shares were mixed today. Well, bad weather in February didn't stop shoppers from taking advantage of deals and helping an anemic economy get some of its footing back. David Weiss is chief economist at Standard & Poor's. He's with us live from New York this morning. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
We kept hearing about snowstorms causing unemployment issues. I guess people weren't hampered from going to those stores, though, were they?
No, neither snow nor rain nor sleet will keep Americans from their appointed shopping, that's for sure. They were out there in force for just about everything except cars.
And what were some of the sectors that, you know, the cars I know were down, sort of a drag on the rest of retail sales, but who was up?
Well, electronics, very strong. Super Bowl, getting ready for March Madness, a big increase in electronics stores. We also saw big increases in restaurants, which was a real surprise given the weather. I think people were desperate to get out of the house. On a year-on-year basis, the other big one was non-store retailers, which means heavily internet purchases.
Online, yeah.
Yeah, you can get to the computer even if you can't get to the mall.
How important, David, is this number in sort of placing where we are in this economy?
This is critical. The consumer is 70% of the U.S. economy, and we're really relying on the consumer to get out there and lead us out of recession.
Is this recession like any other? I mean, do you think, I mean, because we talk about, well, we need the consumers to spend money to get us out of the recession, and other recessions have proved that. What about this one?
I think this one's a little different. This one looks more like a lot of the financial panics we saw prior to World War II than it looks like the recent recessions. History suggests that these are a little harder to get out of. It's a slower recovery than it is from a typical recession.
In a few minutes, David, we're going to get the latest data on how consumers are feeling at the moment. This is that University of Michigan sentiment number. Connect that to retail sales. I mean, can we make some accurate predictions with what we hear today?
Well, take it with a grain of salt, but generally strong consumer confidence indicates people will spend money. We're hoping for a good number that'll indicate retail sales will continue strong in March.
David Weiss joining us from New York. David, thanks.
Thank you.
A judge today looks at a settlement that could pay more than $600 million to workers made sick by dust at the World Trade Center site. 10,000 Ground Zero rescue and recovery workers could get a payout. It's been more than 8 years since terrorists brought the Trade Center towers down, and yet there's still an empty space there. And that's the result of a stalemate between the site's developer and the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports today is an important day for the future of that site.
Peer through the fence around the World Trade Center site and you'll see some buildings are going up. The 1,776-foot Freedom Tower, for one, and a new transportation hub. But it's the east side of the site that's at stake today. Specifically, how much public money will back developer Larry Silverstein's construction of two additional skyscrapers?
The Port Authority wants Silverstein to take on more risk, but he wants the Port Authority to help finance it.
That's Mitchell Moss, a professor of urban policy and planning at New York University. He says the Port Authority doesn't want to put up the money because it's afraid there won't be any tenants to fill the buildings. He doesn't agree.
The truth is this site has intrinsic value and it will be occupied. The Seven World Trade Center, which Mr. Silverstein built on his own, is now complete. It's fully occupied. It's been leased at very, very competitive rents, and no one thought that would happen.
But the commercial real estate market has only gotten worse since Seven World Trade Center went up. Christopher Jones with the Regional Plan Association says the Port Authority shouldn't use public money to build two more towers in this economic climate.
You do have to bring the site up to grade. You do have to build the foundations for the towers that can be built later when there's a market to rent the space. But you don't have to build all four towers immediately.
If there is no deal today, an arbitration panel could come up with a solution, but city leaders worry that would only mean more delays for the entire site. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Friday, March 12, 2010, at marketplace.org. A bankruptcy examiner in the Lehman Brothers case has officially outlined the final days of that firm. The report was filed late yesterday in Manhattan federal court and details the reasons behind the firm's collapse and what laid the groundwork for the financial crisis. Marketplace's Elisa Roth joins us live from our New York bureau to talk about what it says. Good morning, Elisa.
Good morning.
Creative accounting. I mean, what is this, another Enron?
You know, at this point anyway, it doesn't look nearly as blatant as Enron, even if the numbers are a little dodgy. What the report does say is that Lehman was so worried about keeping its credit ratings up that it used an accounting maneuver to move a lot of assets off its books. So that made it look like the company had a lot less debt than it actually did. Now, the thing is that companies always have an incentive to make their financial situation look as good as possible. I talked to Pete Hahn this morning. He's a lecturer at the Cass Business School in London.
They're allowed to do that as long as they follow the given accounting principles.
And the report says both Lehman's former CEO, Richard Fuld, and the company's accountants, Ernst & Young, signed off on that accounting.
So are they going to be in trouble?
Probably. The report says there's enough evidence against some former Lehman execs and the accountants, Ernst & Young, to take them to court. But when I talked to Pete Hahn, he said this report brings up more questions about the company's situation than just legal liability.
Did the board of directors at Lehman Brothers know it? Did they communicate it to investors? Did the firm communicate it appropriately to regulators? Did regulators, you know, ask the right questions?
And even with 2,200 pages of documentation on all that, it could take a while to answer all those questions.
Marketplace's Elisa Roth joining us from New York. Elisa, thanks.
You're welcome.
Filtering tap water at home is giving bottled water a run for its money. Today, more than 100 companies will display their water filtration systems as a trade show in Orlando, Florida wraps up. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Caitlin Carroll reports on whether the industry really is awash in potential.
There are filters for showers, kitchen faucets, and entire homes. They soften water and filter out contaminants like chlorine and lead. There's a filter to fit almost every imaginable function.
You know, there's a lot of salespeople, and they have a lot of great information, but it can be a rather daunting category or product to try and understand.
Tom Bersma is mingling with some of those salespeople today at the trade show in Florida. Bersma tests water treatment systems for a nonprofit group. The market for home water filtration products is expanding. Market researcher Mintel International predicts sales will grow by almost 20% over the next 3 years. At the same time, sales of bottled water have been slipping. Vincent Purino sells shoppers a standalone water filter that looks like a giant egg.
It's a beautiful design. It's functional. It does save them some money, and also it's good for the environment.
And it costs around $700. I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
The streets of New Delhi, India, are heavily congested with cars, motorbikes, scooters, and tens of thousands of what they call rickshaws. They're motorized three-wheeled taxis. New Delhi was one of India's first cities to fuel its rickshaws with compressed natural gas to cut down on smog. Now the city plans to go a step further. Raymond Thibodeau has our story.
Most Indians use rickshaws like this one to commute to work and run errands. They're basically three-wheel motorcycle taxis. Many of them run on compressed natural gas, part of a decade-old citywide effort to cut down on smog by converting thousands of petrol-fueled rickshaws to cleaner-burning fuels.
I think that entrepreneurial spirit and the ability of the city to absorb new technology, you can see over the decade, the city has really done remarkable.
Samir Brahmachari heads India's Council of Scientific and Industrial Research. He says New Delhi is hoping to go one better with a rollout of solar-powered rickshaws by the end of the year. In New Delhi's Chandni Chowk area, solar-powered rickshaw prototypes already ply the streets. Some are fully powered rickshaws with solar panels on their roofs. Others are solar-assisted bicycle rickshaws. Pradeep Sarma helped design them. He's director for the Center for Rural Development.
All the time, it's coming to my mind, can we go for a new design?
Sarma envisions a solar rickshaw industry that supports itself. Brahmachari does too. He says the rollout of solar rickshaws is the start of a solar infrastructure in India. That includes everything from solar panel makers to a vast network of solar charging stations, where spent batteries are swapped for fresh ones.
rickshaw is a great challenge, and you will be surprised at how many hurdles you have to cross, from business model to logistics to public acceptance. This is where high science is required to really develop a low-cost solution that goes beyond rickshaws.
Brahmachari says he hopes to have at least 1,000 solar rickshaws on the streets by the year's end. And sure, that's a drop in the ocean, but it's an important step towards tackling another form of pollution that plagues many Indian cities: noise. In New Delhi, I'm Raymond Thibodeau for Marketplace.
Medical stocks went haywire this week as Wall Street investors laid bets over a Food and Drug Administration decision expected today. It's going to decide whether to approve a new drug for diabetes. From the health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Gregory Warner reports.
The drug called Byetta LAR is a long-acting version of a drug already on the market, but diabetics could inject this one once a week rather than twice a day. Joshua Schimmer is a biotech analyst at Leerink Swann.
It's once a week. It's very efficacious. Right now, probably the biggest knock on it is that it's not the easiest drug to administer.
And Schimmer says in the multi-billion-dollar diabetes market, convenience is king. That's made another drug by Merck called Januvia a $2 billion seller. That's a pill. But it doesn't work for advanced cases, and it causes weight gain, a hazard for many diabetics who are already overweight. Byetta works for more people, and it reduces appetite. Its drawback is its big needle. Eugenio Sersosimo is an endocrinologist at the University of Texas. He says doctors may not want to prescribe it.
They don't have the time to explain how to inject, how to adjust, how to do this, how to do that.
So if the FDA approves it, Byetta's success will depend on convincing diabetics and doctors that one big shot a week is worth it. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
And finally, there are no doubts some drivers in Virginia this weekend will be laying off the gas pedal. Last weekend, state police handed out more than 7,000 tickets for speeding and a number of reckless driving citations, even simple seatbelt infractions. Fines ran as high as $2,500, leading some people to wonder whether all the activity had something to do with the state's $4 billion budget deficit. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. Check us out online, marketplace.org. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.